This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It is well known that women are underrepresented in the IT world, and that poses a significant problem. While women make up 57% of college graduates, only 18% of them earn degrees in computer and information sciences. That's troubling because technology is one of the fastest-growing sectors of our economy. Experts say it will add nearly 1.4 million jobs by 2020, and that's just 5 years from now. I did the math. And a huge portion of those jobs could go unfilled due to a lack of graduates with computer-related degrees. Therein lies a unique opportunity, and one that our guests today want to highlight. Interesting young women in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, has been a challenge. But meeting that challenge will help solve an equality problem and provide economic opportunity. Ruth Farmer is Chief Strategy and Growth Officer for the National Center for Women and Information Technology and Director of the NCWIT K-12 Alliance. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Charlotte.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to have you here. NCWIT is the National Center for Women and Information Technology, and Lucy Sanders is that organization's CEO and co-founder. She joins us as well. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And Ivana Gutierrez is an undergraduate at UNC Charlotte, majoring in computer science with a concentration in web development and a minor in mathematics. She was the 2011 national winner of the NCWIT Award for Aspirations in Computing, and has represented NCWIT at the White House and at the NCWIT Latinas in Technology Roundtable. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. What are you missing today? Because you're missing class today at the university. What class are you missing right now?
Right now, Computers in Society.
And what is that?
Well, we talk about different topics in computing. So last week we spoke about the gaming industry and if certain things are ethical or not.
They consider ethics in gaming, really?
Yes, ethics in gaming and ethics all across computing.
That's a whole show in and of itself. We'll have to have you back.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was even a consideration. Let's start today by talking about NCWIT, the National Center for Women and Information Technology. When and why did you start this organization, Lucy?
NCWIT was started 10 years ago with a grant from the National Science Foundation. So I don't know if listeners are aware or not, but the National Science Foundation, part of their mission, in addition to funding basic research in the country, is also to ready the workforce for the 21st century. So they were very, very concerned that women and underrepresented minorities were not participating in computing. So we, at the University of Colorado, a group of us put a grant proposal together, and they funded it, mm-hmm. and we got off.
In your class that you're missing right now, Ivana, mm-hmm. how many women are represented in that class?
Right now, out of about maybe 40 students, there's about maybe four of us. Just four?
So
women?
Do the math. Is that 10%?
Less, yeah.
Can't do math. That's why I do what I do. Well, one of NCWIT's beliefs is that people who build technology should represent the people who use it. And we all use technology, it seems to me, today. Almost everybody spends some time each day on a computer, whether they know it or not. If you start your car, you just started up a computer. So why then are men the people who are designing most of the software, most of the hardware? Why?
Well, so that's a really tough question to answer, because historically women were involved in the earliest days with computing. And so there was a dramatic drop in the 80s, late 80s and early 90s, women's participation in computing. So some of that is I think, related to the fact that we don't offer rigorous computer science education in K-12. So there's not a lot of introduction to
well,
it.
Let's stop there. You can finish your thought, but let's stop there, because let's go back to 1985. 37% of computer science undergraduate degree recipients in 1985 were women. In 2012, only 12% were women. Is something happening at the lower grades? If you're saying that we need to do a better job of bringing young girls into math and science, did we do a better job of that prior to 1985 than we're doing now?
Well, prior to 1985, most people didn't know what computer science was or what computing really was. It wasn't really a discipline that a lot of people had in their minds. And then sometime in the 80s, we started to instantiate the discipline, and the image was pretty geeky and pretty nerdy. You know, so the public image of computing is not particularly attractive. And it's not attractive to women, and I think to a lot of men as well. So the image, the public image, the media image of computing really sort of formed itself, I think, in the 80s, and that's part of the issue. The other part of the issue is we really aren't introducing young people to computing in any real way in K-12, and so people just kind of get their knowledge informally. And perhaps boys are more encouraged to get that out of school experience than girls.
But we do all. I mean, you know, kids today have iPads. They have Android versions of iPads. Some of them have smartphones. Many of them have computers or have access to a computer in the home. Everybody's using computers. They like to play games. They like to surf the web. They like to. I don't know what else the kids do on a computer, but I guess email, but that's kind of old-fashioned now for kids. But they're all using computers. So why aren't they interested in getting into the subterranean aspect of computers? What makes it work?
Well, the real issue is that there's not computer science available in the schools to begin with. So in the state of North Carolina, 71 schools offer computer science in the whole state. So there's not really an opportunity to get exposed to even see if you like it. The schools aren't teaching students how to build apps. They're teaching students to use technology for learning. You're using your iPad to read or to do math. You're not using your iPad to develop new technologies. And a part of it is the ubiquity of technology. When I was in high school, we had, you know, Apple IIe's in our classrooms. The only thing you could do with a computer when I was in high school was program it. There wasn't any software. But now, everything that's out there, it's really, like, you can do almost everything with software that's already off the shelf. So getting to that aha moment of, I created something that's brand new that nobody's ever done before is kind of a big, long slog. So getting kids to have that experience of, I just made something and it's brand new, is harder now than it was when we were kids.
Hmm. And you believe that gender diversity, Lucy, is important to innovation. What changes might we see, do you think, if more women become involved in computing and computer science?
Well, if I had a crystal ball, I could maybe tell you that. What we do know...
You'd be very rich.
And I could be very... Yeah, well, I could be very rich, yes. But what we do know right now, that women, by and large, are not inventing the technology that we all use today. So we know, for example, NCWIT does a report on IT patenting. All the computing patents and over the last 30 years, male-only inventions, about 88% are male-only. About 2% are female-only. And the rest are mixed-gender team.
So if you believe that gender diversity, I'm not saying you're wrong, but if you believe that gender diversity is important to innovation, how do you know that?
So there's a lot of research that points to the importance of diversity of thought on innovation teams and in the creativity cycle. So, for example, Scott Page has a book called The Difference, which shows that diverse teams solve complex problems faster and achieve better solutions. We also have some emerging collective intelligence research, you know, that really shows that gender-balanced teams, or at least teams that have 2 to 3 women on them, again, have higher collective intelligence as a team. And that's just 2 of the studies that are out there around that.
Now, Ivana Gutierrez, you're an undergraduate in computer sciences, and you sit in classes clearly dominated by men. I would bet you that
most of the instructors are men, but I've had the opportunity to have some pretty awesome female professors. And one of them in particular, she actually took me under her wing and she helped me a lot. I was able to work in her research lab. She moved to NC State. Her name is Dr. Tiffany Barnes. But it opened my eyes to see that gaming can be done with a purpose. It's not just a regular game like a shooting game, but it can teach math. So I had the opportunity to create a math game that's actually being used in Haiti to teach little kids how to solve fractions. So it's a pretty awesome experience.
So I was going to ask you, as you sit in class and you discuss things like ethics of computers and gaming and whatever else, because you take a lot of different courses other than that, but as you discuss things, do you find that you and your female cohorts have a different point of view on a lot of things from the guys in the classroom, or different ideas, different ways that you would approach it other than the way they would approach it.
Yeah, it actually happens a lot. Most of the time, some guys are set in their ways that they don't want to take in consideration. Let's say we're doing a group project. They don't want to take in consideration, like, a family with lots of kids. I have siblings and I have lots of cousins. So every single time I'm doing a group project, I think, okay, how is this going to affect like my little brother or a family of four or something? And they don't really think of certain things. Sometimes they just go for the cool factor. So a lot of times, you know, we work together and we're pushing for what we think is going to be beneficial to everybody.
Ruth Farmer, you've done a lot of work prior to your taking this position with the Girl Scouts of America, and specifically with a robotics project with the Girl Scouts of America. Have you found that girls bring something substantially different to the table than what you've noticed among young boys or even young men?
Well, the robotics thing is really interesting because girls' teams in robotics do just as well or better than boys' teams, but their robots always have a face. And the girls' robots have faces, wings, eyes, they play music, and the boys' robots are like trucks or like transformers. They're not humanoid. And there's some research out of UCLA that shows if you create a robotics education program around a humanoid robot that interacts with people, it's far more engaging to young women.
Now, do you think that's because boys grow up, little boys grow up playing with transformers, these things that are cars, they're superheroes, they're this, they're that, and they can change. And girls grow up with dolls, which have faces. Do you think that's part of it? Or is it something deeper than that?
I think it could be part of it, but I think it's ultimately that girls are attracted to that social interaction. And that, you know, there's a program we have running out of Lake Brantley High School in Florida where they have these Pleo dinosaurs. They're these robotic dinosaurs that they're very cute and animatronic. And so a group of girls have programmed these dinosaurs. They built a storybook. They take them to little girls and Girl Scout troops, and they teach them how to program these robotic dinosaurs. Well, the girls are completely engaged in the fact that it's got this personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like I heard a story from the founder of iRobot that they were having trouble with people returning their Roomba vacuums because they're like, well, I want the same one back, because they felt like it moves around like an animal and it kind of has a personality. So people were like attached to their Roombas, right? So I think girls get more attracted when it has that interplay like with your social interaction.
Huh. Okay. Ruth and Lucy, you're both obviously, both of you entered this field or were involved in this field at a time when others were not, others of your gender were not. You worked in R&D at AT&T's Bell Labs and other lab settings as well, probably helping design the phone systems that we have today, these digital phone systems. And you've been involved, as we said, in robotics development. What attracted you to the field? Because this was not a field that was populated by women. And there you were.
And it was a new field.
Yeah.
My high school math teacher taught me how to program in an after-school club. And she first got us interested by, we had this little Olivetti desktop where we would do register swaps. And that was the programming language. And she would race us. When we were writing a program, she would race us and... She really got my interest in computing.
We'll come back to that, because I want to know what that swap thing is. Ruth Farmer is the Chief Strategy and Growth Officer for NC WIT. Lucy Sanders is the CEO and co-founder of that organization, and we're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tyndall Subaru Gastonia. March delivers the new Subaru 2015 Legacy with Subaru EyeSight driver assist technology, available now for test drives. Details at TyndallSubaru.com. Well, we tried to do this program a couple of weeks ago, but we got snowed out. So we'll take another gander at it tomorrow. I think we'll get it in without snow because of the weather. Don't have a strong gag reflex? You might not want to listen, because we're going to have Wired columnist Patrick DeGiusto with us. He has written about what's inside a lot of different popular products that we all use, but now it seems he's turned his attention to our food, and the result is his new book called This Is What You Just Put in Your Mouth. It is surprising, sometimes off-putting, and very puzzling. I mean, why are these things in our food? We're going to find out tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, an oil train crashes in Illinois, the 11th accident in the U.S. and Canada this past year. What's behind the rise in oil train derailments and calls for the federal government to respond?
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Ruth Farmer is with us. She's the Chief Strategy and Growth Officer for the National Center for Women and Information Technology and the Director of NC WITS K-12 Alliance. Lucy Sanders is the CEO and co-founder of that organization. And Ivana Gutierrez is with us. She's a UNC Charlotte undergraduate majoring in computer sciences. I asked the question just prior to the break, Lucy, how you got into this, because you got into the computer science field before. If we have a problem today, we had a problem then, too. And you got into it because of a teacher teaching you how to program.
That's right, a K-12 teacher.
Why were you interested in learning how to program?
Because I could get better grades in school, you know, because it was my math teacher. So I was taking really advanced math, and she was teaching computing, and so I thought I'd suck up just a little bit and learn how to program. And it was important to her, and so I did, and it was very interesting.
And this is, by today's standards, this was very primitive programming. When you did a program, what did you accomplish? What could it do?
It could light a light up or something like that. It didn't do anything too profound. You know,
That would bore kids today. They wouldn't be interested in that, would they?
Well, they might. It's pretty fun to talk.
I mean, you have to begin someplace, and that's where you begin, I guess.
Well, and when you're really doing the primitive computing languages, it is very exciting because you're very close to the hardware. Mm. And so you're really starting to see how computers really work. When you have software languages and or platforms on top of software languages, probably more than you want to know, mm-hmm. it gets easier to do more things. But it is still really a lot of fun to be that close to the machine.
And you came in through a kind of a side door here, if I'm not mistaken about this, Ruth. And you've worked with kids who are into robotics. And that's a kind of – robotics obviously use computers. They're not computers per se, but they use computers. What is it that fascinates Girl Scouts about robots?
Well, I came in as looking at ways to get more Girl Scouts into engineering way back in 2001. And robotics was just starting to grow then, and Lego had released these bricks that were programmable, a real simple programming language that you could kind of drag and drop little blocks. And it was starting to grow, and actually we were founding this robotics tournament, and I was asked to participate, and I was like, you know what? If we're going to build this thing, girls have to be here on day one, so we're not trying to backfill with girls later. And it's a very successful, back in Oregon, very successful robotics tournament today, and now there's a national program. I think that girls like everything. Girls like everything, and they should get to try everything. And so there's just sort of a tendency to say, well, if it's robots, boys are going to like it, and people are going to socialize their boys towards the robots and the girls away from them. So we created all kinds of really great girl robot camps and girl robot experiences so that they could try it out. And not saying every girl needs to love computing or technology, but they should at least get to check it out.
You know, there was an article in the New York Times Sunday magazine yesterday about the 100th anniversary of Radio Shack, which has now gone bankrupt. But Radio Shack is where a lot of people got their first computers, the TRS-80. And before that, Radio Shack was a hi-fi and radio enthusiast store. And most of the people who were hobbyists in that field were men. So it was a natural extension for Radio Shack to offer computers because they had a built-in customer base of techies. Women never got involved in that, or to the degree that men did. Is there something in the DNA? Is it simply the way the thing was early technology prior to computers was marketed? Was it simply not done in the 30s and 40s where women just simply wouldn't get involved in that? That was just not what women did. Is that part of the problem here?
Well, I personally think that society affords men the ability to have a singular focus on one thing, whereas women are sort of stretched a little thin. you're got a lot of responsibilities on your plate. So this ability to, you know, have your tech center in your garage and really be like tinkering all the time, it just doesn't happen as much. And then there's that, you know, our dads taking their daughters out into the garage and our moms taking their daughters out and their sons out into the garage. Is that happening? Now that Radio Shack is folded, what we have growing now are these maker spaces. And we're kind of seeing the same thing, that these maker spaces are popping up around the country with tools and 3D printing, but they're also becoming dominated by boys and men. And so figuring out that other channel. So we actually have a program. It's called eTextiles, where we have these sewable circuits and little programmable computer boards that you can actually sew into clothing or stuffed animals.
And what do they do once you've
sewn? Well, there's one you can make a little monster that when you hold it up to your heart, it will like flash its eyes with your heart rate. It has a heart rate monitor in it. There's different ways you can make lights light up, but it's a way of bringing in art and textiles and crafting, which is an area women have always done.
And this is the direction computers are going in.
Oh, wearables is huge.
Wearables huge.
Ivana, you've said that it has been your dream since you were a little girl to work with computers. When you were a little girl, that was pretty much a boy thing.
It was a boy thing.
What happened? Why you? Why were you interested?
Well, it's a funny story. My dad, he would take computer science courses, and I used to always sit next to him and watch him do like Hello World programs or his homework assignments. And I used to sit there and be like, you know what? I want to be just like Daddy. I'm going to do this. So then when we moved to Charlotte, I had the opportunity to go to Philip O'Berry Academy of Technology. Mm-hmm. And there I took some computer science classes, programming, and also computer engineering, taking apart a computer and putting it back together. And I saw, hey, you know what? I can really do this. And in particular, two teachers, they took a real interest in me, Tara Kennedy and Sharon Jones. And they really told me, you know what? It doesn't matter that you're a girl. You can definitely do this. You can go to school for computer science. And they showed me different options. And they motivated me to apply to the Aspirations Award in NCWIT. And really, that's how I've stuck to computer science.
And you were the runner-up the first time you were in the award.
First time I was runner-up.
And you were the winner the second time.
The second time I was the winner.
What did you do in both instances? What did you submit?
Well, the first time around, I just spoke about some of the classes that I took inside Philip O'Berry. I took two classes. Visual Basic, I took a Java class, and computer engineering. Now, since I got runner-up, during the summer I did an internship with my school where I helped maintain the computer network of like over 500 computers, and I helped maintain like the Wi-Fi and make sure all the computers were running during the summer. So then the following year, I actually didn't want to apply, but Tara Kennedy, she was like, Ivana, it doesn't matter. Just apply. Just try. You might actually win nationals. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Okay, I'll apply. And I won, and I was actually amazed. And the reason why I actually applied is because I really needed a laptop. I didn't have money for a laptop, and because of college, I needed a laptop if I was going to study computer science. But after winning the award, I saw that it was so much more than just a laptop at $500. It's actually a network, and you gain a lot of friends, girls from across the country that have the same passions for technology as you do, and they keep you motivated throughout the years. You know what? Keep on doing it.
Is there a stigma among girls your age and younger about getting involved in computers, about really wanting to know what's under the hood, so to speak?
Yeah, there is. It's funny. Whenever I tell people, oh, I'm a computer science major, they just look at me and they're like, really? Are you sure you're not a communications major, psychology major? Don't you want to be a teacher? I'm like, no, I study computer science.
And those comments are coming from whom?
From other girls and also guys. Sometimes I walk into my computer science classes, they're like, are you lost? No, I'm not lost.
Is that insulting? How do you take that? Is it insulting?
Well,
is it perplexing? Do you find it humorous?
I kind of just take it, you know, funny, because in reality, it doesn't matter. They can think what they want. I'm still going to keep on moving forward. And I've met so many other girls that have the same problem. You know what? You just prove them wrong. You just laugh and keep on going.
So we said at the very beginning of the program, and one of the reasons we're doing the program is because there's going to be an explosion of jobs in this field by 2020, which is only 5 years from now. And there are not enough college graduates in America going through the system, majoring in computer science, to fill those jobs. So the jobs will have to be offshored or something. But women coming into this field would certainly benefit because they could fill those jobs. And they're pretty high-paying jobs, a lot of these jobs. So where do you start? I would think you have to start in the lower grades, do you not, with a concentration on math, a concentration on science and technology and engineering? Or can you play catch up? Can you say, if you're a high schooler, for instance, right now, and you're home sick from school listening to this program, and you say, well, I'm a girl and I want to make money. Yeah. I have a computer. I'm going to do this. Is it too late?
It's not too late.
It's not too late.
It's not too late at all. In fact, many students, boys and girls, get into computing when they get to college. Mm-hmm. And there's programs now for adults to, you know, learn online or go to a boot camp for a few months.
Code academies.
And code academies. You can go right now online to Khan Academy or Treehouse or Code Academy and just learn computer science on your own.
That may partially answer Courtney's email. She says, I'd like the guest to comment on how a woman who is in her 20s or early 30s might transition to a tech career. Is going back to school the only option? You're saying no.
No, it's not the only option. So right now, you can take free online courses from Stanford, from Berkeley, from Harvard. You can go online and take those courses.
Once you've taken them and you've successfully passed them, how do you prove to a prospective employer that – because you don't have a transcript, do you?
No, you don't.
Well, when you interview for a programming job, for a tech job, they often ask you to program. Yeah. Live. And so if you can program or if you have the skills, you can get work. Absolutely.
And some companies are starting on-ramp programs for older women, older professional women, you know, who have left school. So sometimes they'll even hire and teach you programming skills or technology skills and then put you to work in their company. So we're starting to see more on-ramp programs as well.
Do you have to have a particular facility for math or science or technology or technology, yes, but for engineering to be a programmer, to work in IT? Or is it something more esoteric than that?
Well, you need to be a problem solver. You need to be analytical. You need to take big problems and be able to decompose to get a solution, because ultimately you have to translate the problem into the language of the machine. So you do have to be a problem solver. You have to like that, and you do need to be logical.
Is this one of the things, getting young girls involved, is this one of the things that the K-12 Alliance works on?
Yes. So
how do you do it?
The NCWIT K-12 Alliance is a coalition of everybody who cares about girls being technical. So organizations that serve teachers, like the Computer Science Teachers Association, also Guidance Counselors Association, but also organizations like Girl Scouts and 4-H and Boys and Girls Club and Camp Fire that have students that they work with on a daily basis. And we're all collectively working on reaching out and inviting girls into computing. And so we create materials that we disseminate into this massive network. So we just released a new resource called Top 10 Ways Families Can Encourage Girls' Interest in Computing. And it's a set of talking points that parents can use and family members can use to kind of guide the way that they, you know, connect their girls to these opportunities. Mm-hmm. And because we have this K-12 Alliance, we can get that out to literally millions of girls through these networks.
Is there a problem in your mind, knowing what you do, what you know, and the girls that you work with the way we teach STEM in the lower grades and in middle and high school?
Well, the main problem is we don't teach computer science.
Okay.
It's largely unavailable. I mean, nationwide, 1 in 9 schools offers a computer science class.
But if you get a good fundamental education, if you understand mathematics, you can do you can do algebra and geometry and trigonometry and all that sort of, you have a foundation.
You have a foundation, and by some miracle, you might make the choice to get to college and major in computer science. The challenge is when you walk into college, say you've had no computer science in high school or anywhere in K-12, mm-hmm. You walk into college, your college freshman computer science class will be full of students who have had preparation or students from overseas who have far more preparation. Students who know about it. So you walk in there and you're expected to, like, run with the bulls right from the gate. So we've been actually working on some ways that you can kind of ramp up students at different levels.
Since there are only 71, I think you said, in
71 in North Carolina.
In North Carolina, and I suppose other states are equally anemic in that area, schools that teach computer science at that level. Are there places that parents and young people can go to get this education on their own?
Yeah, absolutely. So a really good start is to just go to code.org. Mm-hmm. They have some introductory stuff, and they can direct you out to all the things that are on the ground. There's also on the NCWIT K-12 Alliance page, we have connections to all of our local organizations that are doing things around the country. And, you know, here in Charlotte for girls, UNC is running summer camps. Project Scientist has some programs. And Ivana herself is running a summer camp for girls at UNC this year.
What's a computer camp like?
Well,
we're all sitting around the campfire with our.
No, actually, I had the opportunity to run two past summer camps. It's called Girls in Tech at UNC Charlotte with the help of Dr. Shagupta Raja and NCWIT. And what we do, pretty much, we get a group. Last summer was about 20 middle school girls. We brought in the parents for the first day orientation to let them know, like, guidelines, okay, they need to be here by this time. And we let them know, okay, first off, we're going to be teaching these girls basic computer science concepts like types of numbers, different types of loops. And afterwards, we used Khan Academy and also Kodu, which is a visual programming language from Microsoft, for them to create games.
Mm. Okay. I want to come back to something, Lucy, that you talked about a little while ago. That is the image, I think you said, the image and teaching of computing. You concentrate on improving this image. What image does it have, and what image would you like it to have?
Well, I almost hate to say what image it has because I don't want to reinforce it. So, listeners, please don't take this too seriously. The image in the popular media has been sort of geeky, nerdy, loner, sitting in front of a computer screen all day long. And that is not reality. We need computer scientists who reflect the real world, who live in the real world and who have those kinds of experiences, and they don't sit in front of a screen all day. But that, unfortunately, is the image. And we just have to keep working on that and talk about how computing is solving the problems of the world. It's not a loner kind of thing. In fact, you can't solve the problems of the world if you're just all by yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, so we just have to keep working on that and keep getting, I think, a very important thing. One very important thing is to make sure the curriculum, the intro curriculum, is that wide, right, and that pervasive, and not just a programming language. Mm-hmm. That, in fact, it shows the power of computing to really start to combat that kind of image.
One of the things I kept reading about over the weekend with regard to this is that we need to build confidence in girls with regard to math and science. Why do they lack confidence?
I would take issue with that.
Okay.
I don't think they
pretty
lack
much 50% of AP calculus, so advanced placement calculus tests nationwide, are taken and passed by girls. So there's not a shortage of smart girls that can do math. I think there's a shortage of smart girls that can do math that are going into computing. And so now this is a big issue because, like you said at the beginning, 57% of college students are female, but only 18% of computer science students. So from a numbers perspective and filling these jobs, we have a problem. So it's a matter of directing them. And, you know, often people will say to me, well, they can just do that. And I'm like, well, tell me that a 14-year-old boy has to walk into a freshman classroom all full of girls and say, I'm going to do this anyway. Girls have to do that, and they shouldn't have to.
We'll come back to that. That's an important point, to be alone, to be a real minority in a classroom of men in that field is a problem. We're going to come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAU. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Diamond Springs, offering bottled water, coffee, and filtration services to the home or office. More information about Diamond Springs at 1-800-715-2286. Earlier this year, an oil train crashed in Illinois. That makes the 11th accident in the U.S. and Canada in this past year. So on the Diane Rehm Show today at 10 o'clock in 20 minutes, what's behind the rise in oil train derailments? And a conversation about calls for the federal government to respond. That's coming up in 20 minutes. And if you'd like to join our conversation about women in IT, you can get on the line and be with us through email, charlottetalks@wfae.org, or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter, and we are coming right back.
We kept saying, if it will just last one more year. Knowing that this car that served us well was going on to serve public radio well and make a difference in providing programming, I felt a little proud. My name is Bruce Yelton, and I donated my GMC Safari to public radio.
Learn more at WFAE.org, and thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about women in IT because there is a shortage of them and a golden opportunity for women going into the field to be very successful, to have an impact, and make a lot of money in the process. Lucy Sanders is the CEO and co-founder of NCWIT. That is the National Center for Women and Information Technology, of which Ruth Farmer is the director of the NCWIT K-12 Alliance. And Ivana Gutierrez is a UNC Charlotte undergraduate in computer science. Let's go back and talk about this problem of being a lone wolf, so to speak, the lone girl, four of 40 girls in a classroom of men. Each year, about 8,000 women in the entire country, 8,000 in the entire country get computer science degrees compared with about 35,000 men. That means having female role models, female peers, is a rarity, it seems to me. So what does NCWIT do to encourage these 8,000 women who graduate with degrees every year to come back and help the young women coming up in their wake?
Well, we have this program, Aspirations in Computing. It's nationwide. And like I mentioned before, we try to identify young women in high school that have interest, and we encourage them. They encourage each other a lot. And then we connect them to women in the industry, men in the industry. We connect them to opportunities going forward. And I think one really important point that I know Lucy would want me to say, because she's looking at me, is that actually oftentimes people are like, you can't be what you can't see. You need this role model. But the reality is, if 80% of the people in the field are male, and we're asking the 20% of women in the field to do all the giving back to bring up more women, mm-hmm. that's a losing battle. So this is a partnership. And we, men and women, create the culture. And it's all of our job to create a culture of inclusion that we all want to be part of. So NCWIT's participation and membership and the people we work with is 40% male. And we are really focused on this being a partnership and not like a women's thing.
And in the break, we talked about this confidence issue. It's not that these young women don't have confidence. It's that they're quiet because they're outnumbered. And you pointed out, Lucy, that when you first hired a man – as part of your organization, right. He didn't say anything for weeks, for months.
For months, until we got some more men on staff, you know?
Now you can't shut them up.
That's absolutely right.
So women are not going to speak out a lot in class because they're outnumbered. Do you find that to be a problem?
Yeah, it's typically
Why?
The problem.
Why?
Well, I just think it's just a numbers thing, right? If you're the only person that's different inside of a room, you're going to be intimidated. You're going to be like, wait, are you going to second guess yourself? Am I right? Or am I going against the current? And are they going to all rise up against me or say something? So it's a little bit daunting. But
look where you are, and you had very few role models.
Yeah. But, you know, again, thanks to the couple role models that I did have that encouraged me and told me that I can do it. Because it's a lot sometimes when you're in school mm-hmm. and you're second doubting yourself, you're taking these hard computer science classes, these hard math classes. And let's say you don't do good on an exam or you don't do good in a class. And today, especially in the United States, it's pretty much grade driven. If you don't get an A, it's like, okay, what's wrong with myself? You're second guessing yourself. Is this really for me? Now, being a girl alone, let's say inside of classes full of guys, let's say they're doing equally as bad, but they're not going to say that. They're going to be like, no, that was easy. I got an A. It's going to be daunting to you. You're like, okay, should I really do this? But having other girls and other role models that are saying, you know what? I did horrible the first time too, but just keep at it because it'll get better. And that's what keeps you motivated throughout the years to keep on in computer science and technology-related fields.
One of the ways that guys get sucked into computers, I think, is through gaming, which is something you obviously know a lot about. And guys play these bang-bang shoot-em-up games, and women, young girls, don't really like that kind of stuff. Is the other part of the problem a lack of software, gaming software particularly, to engage young girls and get them interested in computing? Is that part of a problem?
I guess it can be. I mean, some girls, too, they like shooting games as well. I wouldn't necessarily put it just as girls don't like those types of games, because I know some do. I just think the problem is, you know, being different in a room completely by yourself. If you don't know someone or have heard of someone and seen someone who likes the same thing as you, you're going to be less motivated to even try it. You're going to be like, why am I going to go through this?
And you've created games at UNC Charlotte. You've mentioned a few already, but talk about what you've created here.
Well, I had the opportunity the summer before I started at UNCC to work at the Games Plus Learning Lab. And there I worked with Evie Powell to help modify this game that she made for networking inside of conference setting. It's called Snag'em. And then also this other math game called Elephants and Horses with one of my friends that is being used in Haiti to teach kids math concepts.
That fascinates me, the Haiti part of that. Seriously, because they're still recovering from that horrible earthquake, and it's an impoverished country. It always has been. Where do they get the computers? Where do they get the electricity?
Well, it was a program, again, Dr. Tiffany Barnes, she runs this type of program, and now she's at NC State. Okay. But that game, it was like a one child to one laptop. I forget
the name.
Yeah,
one laptop per child.
Laptop per child, and that's where the software was run.
Tech companies are very concerned about this issue. Intel and Microsoft and Google are behind your efforts to help create more involvement among women in technology, but then so is the Bank of America, companies like that. I understand why tech companies care. Why does the Bank of America care?
Bank of America is actually one of the biggest tech companies in the world.
Pretty much every company is now a tech company. Pretty much every, in fact, I think, every company uses technology to deliver their value proposition to their customers. So
we use Windows XP.
Well, you might want to update that just a little bit. Although Windows XP was a really good operating system.
So the companies, successful companies, need to get on board with this for the same reason that a Microsoft or an Apple needs to get on board.
Well, and if you were to look at patenting, for example, you'd see a lot of not what we would consider non-tech companies patenting. You know, and so yes, I mean, we know many like financial institutions that consider themselves a computing company.
You are a minority within a minority this, because you are obviously Latina. If you look at the statistics of who is working in the computer science field, only 26% in 2013 were women. 3% of those were African-American women, 5% Asian, 2% were Hispanic women. Why are Hispanics, Latinos, Latinas, why are they at the lower end of that
scale? I think the reason is because girls, they just don't realize that that's a possibility. What happens most of the time, last summer, two of the girls in my summer camp, they were Latinas. And it's interesting, when I spoke to the parents, these girls, they were super excited about the camp. They would go home and they would work on their game at home and program. And the moms would be like, you know, I didn't even realize that my daughter can work in this. I didn't even realize that that's a possibility. We use a phone every day. She's on the computer all the time. But I didn't know that there were jobs like this. And you're studying computer science? What is that? So I think the problem is that they just don't know. Even though you're using technology, doesn't mean that you realize that you can code, or you could work instead of just using it.
You brought up an interesting question. We've been talking about this, attracting young women into this field, or in some cases, young boys, because if you don't know what it is, how could you possibly have an aspiration to be in it? This is a stupid question. What is computer science?
Computer science is the study of computers. In my concentration, I concentrate in web development, so creating websites, web pages, programming. And there's a lot of different concentrations.
I don't know the name of the website. You can go to – is it Foursquare? Not Foursquare. It's Square something. And you can –
Squarespace.
Squarespace. Thank you. And develop your own website. So why do you need to study it? And that's another stupid question, but I want to ask these questions. Every program known to man has been developed.
Yeah.
We have Word. We have Excel. We have games. We have email programs. We have apps for our phone. What's left? Why do we need to keep up with this? Why don't we just keep going with what we got?
Well, I mean, just because there's a program online to be able to drag and drop your own website doesn't mean that's what you want. You want to customize it, right? Okay. And at least in my case, some students are self-taught. They don't need to go to school. But in my case, I need to sit down in a classroom and learn in an institution to be able to do it. If not, by myself, yes, computer science, you need to be able to study on your own. But I need that extra push to go to school.
Well, and all the things that can be invented haven't been invented in computer science. So you start to look at the next frontier on big data, cloud computing, sensors. There's so many things that are going to require, again, this problem decomposition, right? Where you look at the world and you start to think about how to use technology to solve these kinds of problems. And the world is going to be awash in these data. They may have so many sensors doing all these different things that there's going to be tremendous opportunities in healthcare and other places. So when you study computer science, you learn how to do that kind of thing.
Okay. So let me share some things that have come in from listeners while we've been talking. Barbara emails, I'm a 55-year-old female computer professional. I am part of that group of women who entered computing in the early 80s. The only reason I decided on a computer degree is because there was a request made to the guidance department of the school I sent my application to. If anyone scored high in math on the entrance exam, counsel that person to try for a computer degree. Before that, I was considering an accounting degree. Do your guests know if such recruiting is a unique experience of that time? Maybe that's what's lacking now. I had no specific computer training in high school. I was taking the usual AP courses offered at that time for students. Is there an effort to get kids to do this?
In fact, there is. So we launched a program a few years ago called Counselors for Computing, where we are training guidance counselors to understand that if a student, especially a young woman, walks into your office and is like, I'm into math and science, that they have all the tools to say, here's the jobs pathway in computing. Because a lot of what's been in the media is all the jobs have been outsourced, there's no jobs. And so counselors weren't getting the information. And so we created an entire program to do that. And we bring industry in as partners to talk to the counselor.
Cheryl emails, I'm 67 years old with a math degree. They did not have computer degrees when I got my first degree. I was a computer analyst and systems analyst soon after graduation. We decided to start a family, and I did not want to leave my baby. Staying home with children ended my computer professional career. Technology changes so fast that you get behind very quickly. Maybe I was not assertive enough, but I ended up teaching high school math. I am now working on getting my PhD in instructional design and technology at this old age. I'm about a year away from being able to start my dissertation. If she wanted to go back into computer, is it too late for her?
Oh, no.
No, absolutely not.
Go, Cheryl.
Tony, as the owner of a healthcare information technology consulting firm, I see the unfortunate imbalance of the sexes in the IT field every day. We encourage women across the entire age spectrum to join us and discover the wonders, challenges, and rewards of the computer sciences.
Healthcare IT is going to be huge. It's already huge. And I think that's one great way to attract young women. Like, in my opinion, one of the failings we've had in how we've sold this discipline is we haven't made it really clear that if you want to have an impact on the world, being in computer science and IT is a fantastic way to do it. We sort of socialize girls especially to think, well, if I want to be a do-gooder, I want to help people, I need to be a doctor, I need to be a nurse, I need to physically in person take care of people. But you can have massive impacts on the availability of healthcare, on healthcare information, on making sure that patients' information is traveling with them as they travel through their lives. There's so many ways that you can have an impact on people using technology.
Finally, Greg emails, my daughter is 9 years old and in the STEM program at her public school in Cabarrus County. She absolutely loves it. My question is, what are some resources to find summer, extra, et cetera, programs for her to take part in? Your summer camp sounds like a good place.
Yeah, my summer camp is a place. Girls in Tech at UNC Charlotte. He can definitely call the STEM education office there, and they'll give him some more information on that. And he could also look up on ncwit.org.
Also, there's madewithcode.com is a website specifically about How the World is Made with Code, and is directed at girls, and it has inspiring videos. It has some like online activities that she can start to do, and it directs you to some on-the-ground resources as well.
You have some suggestions for companies who are looking to hire people, and you say that they should be focusing on competencies rather than credentials. Explain that.
Well, so I really feel that you can get a great computer science background in a lot of different ways, and that there's a lot of places you can go to school. And one of the things that I think is really important, especially for Latinas, is that sometimes you don't want to go to school far away. And so I want companies to really look in their own backyard. There's some fantastic institutions providing computer science all over the country, and there's lots and lots of great students available.
And Lucy, you see a problem a lot of times with the way these job descriptions are written. They are written targeted toward men, and men know the language, and they'll apply even though they may not fit all the criteria, while women look at the criteria and go, that's not me.
Well, first of all, I think the job descriptions generally are just bad, and it's the case of the ones that we've analyzed that they – so it turns out every word has a gender. Who knew? and so they generally are written, most of the words used have a male gender. So you're looking for balance, and you don't need to list 55 requirements.
Interestingly enough, NCWIT is a partner in an effort to bring more girls into science through a 52-week TV series, which is going to be set to debut nationally in the fall on the CW network, called Fab Lab. We don't really have a lot of time to talk about this, but I think it's fascinating that an entertainment TV network has decided to produce a show on computer science.
Well, we care very much about the image of computing and the image of girls doing computing, and if we can get into television and change that, we're excited about it.
Ruth Farmer is the NCWIT K-12 Alliance Director. Lucy Sanders is the CEO and co-founder of NCWIT, the National Center for Women in Information Technology. And Ivana Gutierrez is an undergraduate in computer science who's a national award winner. Thank you all for the hour.